There is kind of a trend. It's called paperization. Companies want to do everything from paper because consumers think paper is the best material, the most sustainable material. This is bullshit. I was really shocked by all the paper stuff you get, even in a hotel for breakfast.
And the reason that we use paper cups, it was easy. It was easy for the brand. The brand was like, okay, I can just buy all of these cups for 3 cents a piece. I can hand it off. Not my problem. I don't have to manage anything. Customer takes it. They love it. They throw it away.
In Germany, you would never have this. If you stay in a place, you get a proper ceramics plate.
What are some actionable steps that a designer or a brand can begin taking to go down this path of sustainable packaging? Ah, perfect. Uwe Melikar. Uwe, I've met you in person in London, and we've been online a bunch of times. But one, I'd like to know how you're doing. But two, I really don't even know what you do. So let us know.
I can help you there. Actually, from my background, I'm a package designer. I studied communication design in the early 90s, way back in time.
Oh, vintage. And
then I did an internship at a bigger agency, which was really one of the ones at the time. And after 3 years, I took over the whole place. I became a partner. Not really. I mean, I became a partner. From the very first moment, I started working in packaging, because packaging is really what my heart beats for. It's something in between graphic design and product design. And that's why I'm so excited about it. It's three-dimensional. You can touch it. It has to do with people. So a lot of things.
It's so funny, because like when somebody's in packaging, like, well, what do you like about packaging? It's like bags and boxes and cans. But what's the alternative, right? You can do design. You can do websites. And that's all great. But you know, a website, you make a mistake, you go in there, change it. Packaging, you've got to be super precise. You've got to be really deliberate, because if you make a mistake, it's an 18-month process to make a change. So you got to know what you're doing.
You also asked me what I'm doing now. And after 25 years in the same agency, I felt it's time to move on. It felt that it's a little bit like slow. And well, I wanted to break free. And that's what I did 4 years ago. I sold my shares and I started my own business, as I say. So starting from scratch, not really, because I have a huge network. And now I'm developing packaging solutions for companies around the globe, not only in Germany. I'm looking for Norwegian company, for Finnish company, for Japanese company. And I'm also doing some consulting work for companies or institutions. That's what keeps me awake at night. And this is really exciting. And I love my job.
Yeah, that's all right. So you work for a team, you leave the team, you start your own company.
Yeah, and maybe interesting to know, it's not only me working for these projects. It's always that I team up with my network. So I bring a bunch of experts together for a certain requirement or for a certain job. Sometimes you need, a environmental scientist. Another time you need a 3D designer or a graphic designer. Yeah. And I bring these people together and then we develop these projects.
Nice. So it's like a special unit.
Yeah, it's a special way of working. It's a more agile way. It's a more, sometimes it's also, takes more effort to do so, but it turns out to be good the way it is.
You know, if you look at American football team, or if you look at, any kind of military action, you've got people that are generalists and then you've got people that are specialists. You don't have the generalist do every project. If I need a specific thing, I pull together the appropriate team to execute that project so I can get to the right results. Otherwise, you're going to have some general ideas. Could be the perfect solution, but you're missing the perspective of the environmental scientist, maybe from structure, from material. Like, you've got to pick and choose who you're bringing on these teams. So how do you decide that?
I mean, in the center of my work is the client's demand. So I listen carefully what they need and what they want. And I have more of these experts. So if one is not available, I ask another one. And until now, it went very well and I brought the right people together. There's one thing I'm missing sometimes, to have someone around you all the time so that you can really share thoughts and all those things. So it may be that I change that for the future. There are some ideas, but for the moment, as said, tick works well.
Because I hear a lot of people that are, you know, with a position for a while and then they move out and they try to begin their own agency, their own team. Getting that first customer is always a challenge. It's like, I just launched my company. I have my website. Now I'm going to start building my network. But you've built a network over the years. So when you transition, you already have the opportunity to reach out to these companies.
And it's an ongoing process. It's mm-hmm. on the one hand side, it's an ongoing process of learning. So my knowledge grows every day. And on the other hand, it's also like meeting new people. I'm vice president of the EPDA. That's the European Brand and Packaging Design Association. I used to be the president, and I meet people from all along the value chain. And this is also very important for me. It's not only packaging. It's not only about packaging communication. Mm. It's not only about the material or the structure. Well, it's also that you make up your mind at the very, very early stage. How will it be transported? Where will it be stored? How will it be sold? All these things make a good packaging at the end of the day. And that's why I'm connected to, well, packaging manufacturers, substrate right. suppliers, brand owners, and so on. And one thing right. I want to add is, well, the motivation to leave that agency was also that I want to focus more, and I focus completely on sustainable packaging. That's mm-hmm. something I want to give back to the world. I have a lot of flight miles collected, and now it's time really also to do something for our planet. There's a lot to do, I can tell you.
All right, let's take a quick second to talk about idpdirect.com. Go right to that website, download the design guides, the sustainability guides, the recyclable icon guide, which basically lists out all the different icons. It gives them to you in vectors. You can drop them right into your artwork right now, today, and go right into production. All right, back to the pod. So if we shift the conversation to sustainability, right? Sustainable packaging, that's where your baseline is like, we're starting something, it's got to be sustainable. There's a lot of companies out there that are promoting sustainability, but they don't necessarily know how.
Teach others what you know.
And I think this is because it's really new. Even though sustainability has been around for a while, sustainability is kind of new. What are the ways that you're seeing some of these companies promote just the fact that they're moving into sustainability without focusing on the packaging, like just in general?
Unfortunately, they sometimes promote more than they actually do. Though, yeah. Honestly, there's a lot of bending the truth. I wouldn't say lying, but it's really bending the truth. So they put something in their PR that they did this or that. And well, if you look at it at a first glance, let's have an example. The first bottle made out of ocean plastic. This is bullshit, to be, if I say, am I allowed to say so? Because
yeah,
you can't make a full bottle out of ocean plastic. It's simply not possible because you have a food grade, limitation. It's not possible. If you look deeper into it, then you find out, okay, it's only 25% made out of ocean plastic, and ocean plastic really comes from the ocean, but from the beach. It's collected, it's social plastic. And then if you look further on, then you see, okay, only 300 pieces have been made so far. It's just a prototype. It's good that they're on their way, but it's not good if they will claim, we did it, we made it.
Yeah, I remember it was like a method. Did the first ocean, one of the first ocean plastic soap bottles. And I think it was, maybe like 12 years ago. And it was a black, green, blue, black bottle, you know, but it allowed them to talk about the impurities and the difficulty and like the process they went through. And it was just a limited edition because it's not scalable.
I found it back on one of the tables from my jewelry work and several jewelries. And there you see those projects every once in a while. It's great. I mean, it's a starting point. We need that. It's good. It's also a trial and error. It's also the acceptance from the consumers need to be tested. So why not doing it? It's just how you promote it. That's a little bit the problem sometimes.
So let me just ask you this. If we go to packaging, how do you define sustainable packaging?
It starts with, first of all, why do we need packaging? What is it for? And there are three things. One is like protecting the product, keeping it longer fresh on the shelf, or keeping it, well, safe from damages from the outside. And the second one is definitely a function, let's say convenience, open, reseal a pack so that you can use it conveniently. And then the third one is communication. It's needed to communicate the brand, what's inside, giving warnings or giving extra information about this valuable product. Well, and this creates a triangle. And there's another dimension. It's costs as well. But in this triangle, you first need to meet the demands from these three mentioned points. And then you can discuss sustainability within these requirements. And then, well, the idea starts on how to make the package less harmful for our environment. If it comes to its end of its life, what happens with the package? Will it be burned? Will it end on a disposal? What is the end of life? And that's the decisions you have to fell at the very beginning. 80% of the decisions at the very, very beginning of this process, in the design process, in the briefing process, they define, well, how sustainable a package will end up.
So if I just take a plastic container and I make it out of paper, does that automatically make it sustainable?
Not necessarily. We see
a lot of that, right? It's like, oh, it was plastic, now it's paper. It's like, but
plastic
now
is not bad as such. It's just the question of what you do with it and how you're using it. And sometimes if you have a direct comparison and there are LCAs, life cycle assessments, that really from a scientific point of view value the two containers against each other, then you'll see that maybe the plastic one is better in this specific use case than the paper one. There is kind of a trend. It's called paperization. Companies want to do everything from paper because consumers think paper is the best material, the most sustainable material. In many cases, it's right. In others, it's not so right. So in general, it's a problem that consumers are lost. They really need educated what is sustainable for this category and what not. There's a project in Germany called SUSI, and they test scientific approach. They test different pieces of packaging from a category, different alternatives, and they really give ratings, a 5-star rating, which one is the best or which, if this one is better than the other, so that if this ends up on a bigger scale, that consumers are really get orientation what to buy and what better not to buy if they want to contribute to the environment.
I go to the grocery store and I really look at the people that are shopping. I don't see anybody comparing and considering the packaging, right? I see people looking at price or just grabbing the product that they always buy because they grew up with it, or it's something that they bought once and they love it and they don't even consider the packaging, right? Like sometimes I think as designers, like we're looking at packaging, we're taking it apart and we're doing the best, we're doing research, we're doing this and that. And at the end of the day, when it gets to the shelf, customer doesn't care. They just go and throw it in their cart and move on.
Yeah, how can they? I mean, they are really lost, but the responsibility should not be shifted towards the consumer. It's a responsibility of the manufacturer, of the brand owners to make a better packaging. My claims always like less packaging, but better packaging. And that's what I'm fighting for. Sometimes it needs a little bit more money to be put in to achieve these goals, but it's worth it. And politics are also, demanding it. We have a PPWR, a new regulation coming into force, hopefully soon. And there are some really tough challenges in for packaging manufacturers as well as for brand owners if they want to sell their products.
And that was PPWR?
PPWR, yeah. Packaging Waste Directive.
Is that Europe, Germany? How broad is that?
That's a European thing. It's the problem. We have all these countries in Europe and they have their own systems. So in one, if you have like this cup, for example, and paper cup in one country, you have to put it into, the collection system for recycling. In the other, you put it in the paper bin. So there is no unique or uniform solution for that.
The United States is even worse because each state has its own. And then inside of each state, each city has its own. So it's so complicated.
I know. I've been there not so long ago. I was really shocked by all the paper stuff you get. Even in a hotel for breakfast, you have these single-use cups or plates or cutlery. In Germany, you would never have this. If you stay in a place, you get a proper ceramics plate and it'll be washed later on. And that's what I want to talk with you about. It's reusable packaging. And this is also kind of a piece of this knot, but a cup is also a reusable item. This is, for example, one. I have a plastic cup in my hand from a company called Recup. A couple of companies coming up with these systems. Well, and if you go to your coffee shop next door, you get this cup, you pay €1 for it, and you can bring it to another collection point or another coffee shop that is connected to the system, you give it back somewhere else and you get your money back.
So you're renting the packaging, right? So what we talked about, paperization, you know, there's recycling schemes, there's all these other things, but reusable seems to be a big shift that we're seeing. So like with Recup, what is that cup made out of?
Oh, it's a plastic, it's a cup of plastic and can be recycled at the end of its life, but it can sustain, let's say, 100 loops. And this is what makes it so valuable. Yeah. You don't need to produce all these new cups. You can use the same one again and again and again.
And the reason that we use paper cups, it was easy. It was easy for the brand. The brand was like, okay, I can just buy all of these cups for 3 cents a piece. I can hand it off. Not my problem. I don't have to manage anything. Customer takes it. They love it. They throw it away. Like, it was all about ease and use. But this isn't, you know, this isn't that big of a shift. You just have to remember to bring it back.
Yeah. You asked something from the customer to do the extra mile, to bring this cup back. Well, at my home, they pile up and then I bring them in one go. You need to afford that, but it's not a fortune if you have 5 or 6 of those cups at home. Yeah, but that's also education needed, that it contributes to sustainable goals, that you really can help reduce or help to change the climate topic.
All right. So then if we're looking at a way to design for refillable, right? Not recyclable. We've got a brand. They need packaging that they want to be sustainable. If we don't want to look at it from a recycling standpoint or a material standpoint, and we really want to see, and maybe the right solution is a refillable solution, how do you begin? Like, where does that conversation start finding out that refillable is a better solution than recyclable or any other type of solution?
It starts with looking at the whole journey of the customer, of the product, what you have in mind. And you have to think about, how does the customer gets your product? What is he or she doing with it in the meantime? Is there a chance that he or she can drop it somewhere? It's a holistic view on things. And it started very early. I mean, these refillable bottles you had in the early ages when we had the milkmen come knocking on your door, bringing your bottle, and you took it back. It was cleaned, refilled, and be brought back. Well, there are other examples, especially in Germany. We have a very, very advanced system of beer and water, mineral water bottles. I just brought you an example here. This is a glass bottle, and this is interesting. I mean, this will also be taken back. It'll be cleaned, delabeled, new label on, and then it comes back into the store. And this bottle can sustain, let's say, 40 to 50 loops, and this is great. So you don't need to create a new glass bottle, but it needs a system. It needs a collection point. We have in each and every supermarket, we have these machines where you can just drop this bottle in and then you get your deposit back. And that dates also back. The first deposit system already started in the 19th century. Imagine that it started that merchants of drinks, they just gave people money if they brought their bottle back. So they didn't have to buy new ones or produce new ones. Later on, they thought, hey, we can do that beforehand. So if I give a bottle, then I take the money and I give it back. So that's the start of a complex infrastructure. And today you see it in systems like Loop, which comes from your country, and it ends up in these wonderful containers like this Häagen-Dazs ice cream stainless steel container, which is more a product than a piece of packaging. And what the consumer gets is convenience. It's double wanted, so the ice cream is kept by far longer fresh than in a cardboard or in a plastic bin. So it's a complete mind shift. It's a complete shift of paradigm. And this also answers a lot from the packaging industry, from the brand owners, and from the consumers.
All right, so we got a couple things there. One, the bottle, the water bottle that you can take back, they delabel, re-clean it, refill it, send it out, back out. Why don't we do that more often? I remember as a kid, you know, and I've said the story a million times, like I would walk to school, like in New York, I would walk to school. On my way to school, I would find bottles. I would pick up all these bottles. And at the top of the hill before I got to my school, there was a little convenience store. And I could walk in with all the bottles, put them on the counter, and they would slide over, you know, 20, 30, you know, 40 cents or something like that, depending on what the bottles were. And then they would turn around and they would put them in these crates that they had behind there. Right, divided up all the bottles. And then somebody would take those bottles. They would do the same thing. They'd come back. And then when I went to go buy a bottle, I'd pull it out of the refrigerated section. And the bottle wasn't perfect. It wasn't perfect like it is today. it would have like scratches along the edges because, you know, when the bottles kind of rub on each other, but it was clean. And it's gotten to a point where consumers expect the packaging to be perfect before making a purchase, but really the packaging isn't meant to be perfect. The packaging is meant to protect the product inside. So the product inside is perfect. But now consumers, if you go to a store and you go to pick a box and the box has a corner that's dent or a scratch on the, you don't buy it.
I'm not taking that.
So you grab another one for sure. You do. Again, this is something you need to learn in Germany and other parts of Europe. It is learned for beer and for water. And even in countries where you may don't expect that, for example, in Vietnam, you have like this guy here. Oh. It's a stainless steel bottle for beer. And if you buy that, you have to pay $5 as a deposit for this bottle. But it can be in the world forever because it's so well developed and so sustainable.
That bottle is insane from a packaging standpoint. I see that in a beer section. I'm picking that bottle up. That is the coolest thing. I'm probably not going to return it. I'm just going to keep it. That's a beautiful piece of packaging and kind of tells the story of sustainability. If finding your spec data is a wild goose chase around your office, you've got a data problem. Specrite is the only cloud-based management specification solution that every brand needs. Because if you don't spec right, you'll spec wrong.
We have a problem here. The bottle I've shown you, the water bottle, that's a typical pool bottle. It says Mineralbrunnen, so it's, the association of water manufacturers, and they decided to go for a small range of bottles. And, if I return this bottle, a couple of manufacturers can use it again. But what we see here is that we have only for beer, for example, we have 150 different types of beer bottles with the branding on, embossed into the glass or with some fancy forms. And that makes it really complicated. I mean, these distances in Germany are nothing compared to what you have in the US. But if I buy a beer from Bavaria, which is a very good beer over there, then the bottle needs to find all the way to Hamburg so that I can drink it. But it also needs to go all the way back if it's a fancy branded bottle. If it's a pool bottle, it can be also filled with another beer in northern Germany.
So then if everything was perfect, then we would need to have standardized bottles, standardized colors, standardized shapes that you can just relabel, nothing necessarily branded on the glass.
Yeah, and I can show you another fantastic example. That's a project I'm involved in. That's the brand is called See Me, but that's just their own brand. It's a platform. The platform is called Zero, and they offer other companies with soap products, with also cosmetic products like body lotion, creams. They offer this platform. They can choose their own label, shape, material, color, whatever they want. They can also choose their own closure, but they have to go for this Boston round bottle. And then they make sure to have all the infrastructure in place. They have contracts with huge retailers here in Germany. And as a customer, I buy this bottle in the store next door, and I can just return it like the water bottle, like the beer bottle. As I said, these are already advanced systems. I can put it back into this deposit machine. I get my money back. And they make sure that it'll be clean, that it'll be relabeled. And here it comes back to what you said. Yeah, sure. I mean, for a cosmetic product, you don't accept too many like irritations on the glass, scratches, or also label being half peeled off. But it may not be in the loop, let's say, 40 or 50 times, even if it can, as a glass bottle, it may be in the loop 10 times, but it's already a big step forward. And it, at a certain moment, depending also on the critical mass, it can make the packaging cheaper, even cheaper as the single-use package.
So then on something like that, right, let's say that bottle, it's the first time it's produced, it's the first time it's on the shelf, and the first time that I buy it, it's perfect, it's a label. If I put it side by side with a plastic bottle, same exact example, and I buy both, I take back the glass one, I send the plastic one to recycle. What are the benefits there of the glass one versus this plastic one?
Well, if you look at it from a scientific point of view, again, it depends. It depends on the distances, where is it washed, how far does it have to travel. It's by far more weight a glass bottle has compared to a plastic one. Yeah. So it really needs a very critical view on this whole approach. Mm-hmm. But this company, for example, they did this LCA and they found out that with their established system of different cleaning facilities around the country, and with all these like logistic efforts they put into it, they can prove that it's the better solution. And as you said, as a customer, you get a nicer packaging.
Oh, you do. I remember I was on a plane, and the person that sat next to me just happened to be a food scientist. They work for a yogurt company, and we were talking about sustainability, and like, all of our yogurt just goes in a plastic tub. It's recyclable. It has the foil lid, which can be potentially recyclable, but it's just not at scale. In the US, there's this brand, Wii, which is just a glass yogurt with a foil seal. It's a glass little container. And they're like, we don't understand how they can afford to make that yogurt container, and the yogurt is the same price as our yogurt in a plastic container. Like the challenges of cost and filling and the difficulties and getting it to the shelf and the repackaging, like there's so many challenges there, and the cost keeps going up. I think as a brand, you have to make the decision of margin versus sustainability versus branding.
It's also a matter of profile. If you are the first, introducing a sustainable packaging together with a healthy and also sustainable product, this will be valued by a certain group of customers. Mm-hmm. You have another group of customers that just looks at the price tag. This is maybe not the target group. And as I said, it's not necessarily glass the better solution against the plastic one. For example, we just had this test here. They looked at the whole yogurt shelf, and the winner in this specific setup was a plastic container with a plastic lid. And this is an innovation, which I think is great and can be 100% recycled. It's monomaterial. And if it goes into the right stream, then, it's also a very good solution. It's not the only solution, but I am absolutely convinced that the reusable packages are essential for our common future, and that you can achieve a lot with it if you're having the right infrastructure and everything. And you also can, even some systems, they make it trackable so that they know exactly where your item is at the moment. They at the same time collect data, which is good for the company then. So you can combine some advantages in this reusable system if you want to go down this complex and complicated way.
Yeah, it seems complex and complicated in every application. A big topic in sustainability, and a word that we see thrown around a lot, is circularity and circular economy. So how does reusability fill or fall into this circular system?
If you look at the waste hierarchy pyramid, then yes, the best thing you can do is avoid packaging as such. But we all know these package-free stores, and I think for some product categories, it's a fantastic idea. It's also has something to do with refill. So you bring your own container, or you get something and you put the cereals or noodles into it. But for other products, it doesn't work at all. If you look at wet dog food, for example, thank you very much. Yeah. Then you have reduce the amount of packaging, leave away the secondary packaging, make it thinner, lighter, lightweight, light construction, and so on. That's also a fantastic measure you can take. And then there is reuse. And that's all what I said. I mean, if you are using the same again and again, at a certain moment, there is break even, and it gets cheaper, and it can get cheaper, and it can be more effective for the environment. I have another example for you. Shipping boxes.
Okay.
It's a nightmare. I mean, imagine what we all buy at Alibaba, Amazon, even brand stores. It's a huge amount of paper, which is travels around the countries or around the globe every day. And it has a very short lifetime from the manufacturer to your home. And then Velio takes it, unwraps it. If you don't decide to send it back, you put it into the paper bin. And that's it. Can be recycled, but it's at its end of its life. We have a lot of examples. One is, for example, this, a very early one, Repack from Finland.
Yeah.
started to doing these bags. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
Yeah.
And well, you can just put it in a post box and it will be cleaned and can well be refilled. But I am also busy in one project, which I would like to show you because it stays being a cardboard box. So
okay.
It doesn't look so much different from
that looks like a regular box.
Normally have. Mm-hmm. But the trick here is there's a banderole going around this box. Mm-hmm. So that carries the sensitive information of your personal data, your address, your name, and so on. And if you receive this box from, let's say, Adidas or a retailer, Walmart or whatever, you just take the banderole off. This is waste, okay? But then there is no glue that closes the box. You don't have damages on the box from some glue or something.
Yeah.
So there are some really good advantages. What you have to do then, you take the banderole off. So you simply open it and you fold it together. And it's very simple and very slim. And you bring it to collection point somewhere in your neighborhood. I'm part of this project. And now it's our challenge to build a system so that it covers the whole country or even other countries in Europe with all these collection points. And if you have one retailer like a Walmart or a DHL and they say, yeah, we want to follow that route, then immediately you have covered the whole country. At the moment, we're already far for what we've expected, but it's still some way to go. And
so then,
it's also, there's a digital print on it.
Mm-hmm.
So we know where each and every of those packages are. So we can distribute them directly from the collection point to the nearest store that may need it or to the nearest company that may need it. It's another pool idea. So we hope that we can attract more and more companies following our system and using it. And then we reach the critical mass and can really also offer this box.
Yeah.
For the companies who participate to a lower price. And even with the second loop this box takes, you have 20% of CO2 equivalent emission.
Wow. And that's with the first time around. Do you expect it to be able to go more than two trips?
Not each and every one. Some will be
sure.
Damaged, but we expect four or five times. It's not a problem. We did some tests for sure, and that was really okay.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. It's not just a pack. If we're looking at sustainability, I can't redesign this one item to be more sustainable, recyclable, reusable. It's the entire system. Right, that you have to be able to implement. Otherwise, you're not really moving anything forward. You're just replacing.
Well, sometimes it also helps if you will have a different construction with a different material. Mm-hmm. There is this cradle to cradle idea. I just met Mr. Braungart and had a chat with him face to face, really interesting person. So, well, you can already do something with the material and corresponding construction, but reuse or refill needs more effort. There you really have to go the extra mile. Also the consumer, I mean, it needs you to bring that back.
If you don't do that portion, then the whole thing falls apart. Let's say, what are three barriers for adopting a reusable system?
Yeah, cost is always an issue. You really have to convince companies that they have to invest into that to get to this critical mass. At the same time, the education of the consumer or the knowledge, you can't expect that. I mean, we're not here to learn all about packaging. We have some other things to do.
You kind of talked about when you're working with clients, maybe packaging isn't necessary, right? So if you are a packaging agency, if you make a living doing packaging, and you go and you speak to a customer, you're like, maybe you don't need packaging. How often do you find that? How are you like, you know what? You don't need my services. You don't even need packaging.
Just forget about it.
Are you finding that frequently?
If someone asks me to do something which is absolute overpacked, I would say no. This happened to me. That's not me helping you with this kind of packaging because I don't believe that you're going down the right path.
I just had a client recently that was doing, they felt they were doing the right thing. They were kind of led down this path of doing the right thing, which was reusable. And it was reusable. There was no incentive to bring the product back to be reused. So customers were taking this reusable packaging that was, you know, using a heavyweight plastic. It was a non-woven material, so it couldn't be recycled even as a plastic. And customers were coming back, and the design was so beautiful that customers would come back and get another one. They felt good about getting a new one. And all of a sudden they're stacking up this reusable packaging. There was no reason to return it or recycle it. And it's like, well, you've got a great story that it is reusable, but it's not being reused. So are you actually being more sustainable? Challenging the brand with that question was like, well, you know, we've kind of thought the same thing. And it's like, okay, well, what are you going to do about it? But the customer really loves this experience. Well, if we're really looking at sustainability, you know, can we lightweight it? Can we change the material? Can we maybe change from reusable? And in this case, maybe recyclable makes sense, and using a material that elements that would allow it to biodegrade as well. Because at the end of the day, we're trying to reduce waste. So if we're trying to reduce waste, is the program that you have now the right path? And that's kind of helping somebody, a brand, define what sustainability means to them. And as a packaging designer, like sometimes you have to ask those questions and help the brand define sustainability. And I always say, you know, if you're talking to brand X, you're really not talking to the brand. You're talking to... Yeah. I'm speaking to Uwe. So what does it mean to you? You know, how do you understand it? How does your corporate message directive, like, how does that allow you to understand it? Because sometimes people get overwhelmed, like, well, this is a big brand. I can't challenge them. It's like, you're not talking to the big brand. You're talking to the one person. Have a conversation, challenge them, you know, be challenged. It's okay to do that.
Depends a lot on the right persons in the company.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's really surprising that even huge companies, well, name it, it's Nestle or Mondelez or how you call it, or Unilever. If you find one person who's really like into it and really wants to, well, change the world in terms of possibilities, then it's great. Then you can really achieve a lot. You're absolutely right.
What's the future, right? We're 2024. What do you picture 2030 looking like on the packaging shelf if we continue moving down this sustainability path?
Well, I think each and every package will be either reusable or recyclable. That's something the EU aims to achieve. I think also other countries in the world are trying to meet these goals. We have to, and that's what I can clearly see. It will happen. And well, if we have enough material, if recycling is scaled up, then it's also not a matter of price to get the recyclate instead of virgin plastic. It's ridiculous how much virgin plastic we use today. I don't have the actual numbers, but if you look at Ellen MacArthur Foundation, for example, it's only 10% of plastic being recycled, and from these 10%, only 2% are, well, qualitative high recycled. Mm-hmm. 8% are downcycled into park benches or flower pots, right. And we don't need so many park benches and flower pots. We need other packages made or products made out of recycled material. Look in the fashion industry; they are quite far. They're really using the fibers again, and so there's a lot going on. And maybe packaging is not the first focus point for customers. Maybe products are more attractive to them. It'll grow in the packaging section a lot, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, you know, a material I'm excited about is cellulose, really like Renewcell. It's like a recycled fabric, turns back into a thread and makes a new fiber. But there was a report recently that brands aren't interested. Brands are having a hard time implementing it, you know, because of the collection, because of the infrastructure and the cost. Right? It's like we all want to do something, but when it comes down to the challenge, it's like that's too difficult right now. So what's the easiest thing to implement right now? And kind of, you know, you can build up to different things. So I know that's like something that I'm interested in. Is there anything else out there that you're excited about? Any kind of new materials that you finding, discovering, and think there's a place for it?
Absolutely. It's only this reusable story is only one part of the whole scope. If you look at biodegradable materials or recyclable materials, that's fantastic. There is, for example, one startup scales up at the moment with a lot of money. It's called Traceless, and it has the same quality or abilities as plastic has, but it's completely made out of agricultural waste, and it biodegrades in nature. It's not that you need an industrial composting facility, but it really biodegrades. It takes its time. If you have a thick product, a cup or something, then for sure won't melt away in a couple of days. It takes its time, but this is really Traceless is really interesting, and there are many, many others in this field. Some are really hot air, and some others are really, really serious. really, really serious.
If you're a designer, if you're a brand manufacturer, there's a lot of materials that are out there. Like you said, there's some that are full of hot air, some are that actually have some facts behind it. Do the research, discover what the material is, what is it replacing, how does it benefit the brand, what are the challenges with it? And at the end of the day, when you convert that new and exciting material into packaging, what is the end of life of that packaging? Is there an actual collection? Does it fit into a waste stream? Does it make sense for the geography of where this product is sold? You know, there's all these different questions.
Very important point. Yeah, sure. I think it's, again, talking to all stakeholders in along the value chain and really checking exactly what you want to achieve within the triangle of requirements for the package, and looking at the region where, well, the end of life, the after use scenario is located. We have a problem with all the plastic, well, floating in our oceans. The great garbage patch is twice as big as Texas or France. Yeah. This is a tremendous problem. And if we can solve that by, for example, having biodegraded material in countries where the infrastructure is not so perfect that we have recycling rates of, let's say, 60, 80, 90%, then that's a good answer for these regions. For us, it may be the better solution to have a recyclable material or made out of recycled material already. We have to make sure that it nevertheless does not end up in Indonesia or Malaysia, because there's a big, it's a big business also to sell garbage to other parts of the world. And it's another nightmare we're facing.
No, exactly. And sometimes it's not even selling it. Sometimes it's just dumping it. That's the big challenge. I would say
selling means they give money that they take it. That's the deal.
Yeah. It's a reverse selling. It's like, here's some money to take it. As we start wrapping up, I think the other thing too is looking at the product. It's been a big trend to replace, let's say, with cleaners and detergents and body washes and all these different things. It's like, okay, can we eliminate the water out of these products to then make the product a little bit more compact and then have like a different reusable, refillable system? Are you seeing anything else along those lines where the product is changing and altering the packaging?
I see these developments, and it's also great where it works. Mm-hmm. We put some, shampoo, so solid shampoo replacing the liquid one I normally use for my wonderful it needs performance. And the product I bought, I don't name it now, but that didn't perform. And so I'm not convinced that the product is not comparable to the other solution, and it's not a good solution. But in general, it's logic that if you ship water around the country, that it is not very sustainable way. So if you can like have a concentrate and so on, that helps a lot. IPA, Indian Pale Ale, that was the same idea. There was the syrup, the basics of the beer, shipped to India and then from UK to the colonies. And then they put water, added water to it, and had a fine beer. So it's nothing new.
Is that what that is? That's new to me. I didn't know that. I just thought IPAs just taste terrible. Oh, that's crazy. I didn't know that they had like the condensed syrup and then they would just add water to it to make that. Wow, that's awesome.
I mean, in my childhood, there was a brand called Treetop. It's so funny to follow up this brand story because it pops up every 10 years as the thing. So you buy a syrup and you mix it with water or with sparkling water and get a wonderful, soda. But the same story, it's just, targets people in my age. So who knows it from the childhood and think, hey, yeah, that was a cool time, but the product is not really good.
Ew!
Sustainability is important. Product performance is important. And then, of course, the product having to deliver, right? Because it doesn't matter how sustainable the packaging is. And if the product doesn't perform, right? If the dry shampoo or the bar of shampoo doesn't perform the same, why would somebody purchase it? Right. You're not purchasing something because the packaging is sustainable. You're purchasing a product because the product has to perform.
I don't want to bash products. There are a couple of very good ones. Well, they reduced it to be solid. And so, like what you put in your dishwasher, it's a good example.
Yeah.
It's a tap and it contains all you need to clean your dishes.
For my laundry, I don't do liquid or powder anymore. I do these sheets, these paper sheets that I just put in there. And I have it on order subscription, and I get a flat envelope in the mail, and then that's it. Like,
I got something similar for milk. There is a company in Germany called Veganz, and they're quite successful in vegan milk coming from a corn product, and now the latest move is that they 2D print these sheets. And you put it in your blender and put some water, add some water to it, and you blend it. And then you get out of this pack, you get out of, I don't know, 5 liters of this of this corn milk.
That's crazy. Is it good?
Convince me.
I was going to say, does it taste good?
There's room for improvement.
But you got to start somewhere. So I love it. You know, maybe we're getting 3D printed meat next. And then we just put water on it, and it swells up into a nice big steak. I don't see that happening.
There's a cool thing from a university, and they had pasta, and they just embossed it in a certain way. And if you put it in boiling water, it gets three-dimensional. This is really, really crazy, because imagine you're hiking and you have a box, like a matchbox with you, with the pasta in, and you put it into the boiling water and ends up being a full meal. Yeah. This is cool. If you don't have space in your backpack, then this is a real value. Back to the Future, a long time ago, the movie, they had these pizza from Pizza Hut, and then you put it into the Black & Decker oven, and then it turns out to be a huge pizza from a very small little pack. That's also part of our future. And if it helps the planet, then great.
Yeah, that's kind of where we're headed. So if we start to wrap up here, what are some actionable steps that a designer or a brand can begin taking to go down this path of sustainable, refillable, reusable packaging?
Yeah, I think the first thing is, to try to get a little bit more into the subject. Like, there are so many white papers around giving you the first ideas on how to. I would say, check the product first. Check first what the packet really needs. Again, we're with this on this triangle thing, and within this framework, you can check. Can we reduce the material and it still keeps the product safe, or can we leave away this complex closure and it still is doing the job, or can we replace it by something else? So I mean, small steps here and there, optimize. You can't start designing the super pack from scratch. I think it's really the small steps that help. This is what I would give as a recommendation or a tip to designers.
Uwe, thanks so much. I appreciate you being on here. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I would just come back on your question. There will be a book out now soon. Not soon, but one day. Let's put it that way. We're in our EPDA. We're doing a sustainability workshop, or more workshops. We have a big project going on with all our members and our partners, and the result shall be a book. Talking about sustainable packaging, and with contributions from several stakeholders. And this may be one of the tools that designers then can take and find their answers for how to start with it. There's this book available. This is the Design Agency Boost book. It's not only about sustainability, but also, so that there are also already some answers in.
Okay, so then if I'm in Europe, I want to join EPDA. I can just go to the website. I can join that. I can be a part of the workshops that your team is handling.
Yeah, sure. We invite you to see us at one of our conferences, and if we see each other next time, I'll give you one copy of this wonderful book.
I'm happy to purchase.
I don't want to promote. a book. I mean, it's a pleasure and it's really an honor for me being in your show and, well, talking what is interesting for me and share it with the rest of the world.
No, perfect. And then I would just say, you know, we both have these pins on. We belong to a very, very select group.
No, we should say, otherwise people make up their minds. No, the Pent Awards valuing good design and packaging. Yep. And well, you've been, are you jury member right now or have you been?
I am. This will be my third year. Yes.
Yeah. Last year was my third year. So I was kicked out now. So.
Yep. So if you're out there, you've got some new packaging. Right now is actually the time to submit your packaging to the Pent Awards. You can go to the Pent Awards website and I'll be one of the judges. Uwe, I'm sure you're always welcome to come in and take a look.
I'm an alumni, so I'm part of the club.
That's right. We're all in this club, special club. Uwe, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And if anybody has any questions, you can reach out to Uwe. We've got his all of his links in the show notes. Definitely follow him on LinkedIn and reach out if you have any questions on sustainability. If you've got, if you're an agency, if you're a brand and you're looking to move into more of this reusable, refillable type packaging, he's the guy with all the answers. Uwe, thanks so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much, Emilio.